I would like to read the resurrection story this morning with you. Again, it's just very important to just read the story and not just talk about it. So I would like to read it with you from John chapter 20. And we'll read the first 18 verses. If you have a Bible, I'll just give you a second to open to it. I'm not projecting it on the screen this morning. So I'll just give you a moment to open to John chapter 20. And we'll start at verse 1. Now on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb early while it was still dark and saw that the stone had been taken away from the tomb. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and said to them, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." So Peter went out with the other disciple, and they were going toward the tomb. Both of them were running together, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. And stooping to look in, he saw the linen cloths lying there, but he did not go in. Then Simon Peter came, following him, and went into the tomb. He saw the linen cloths lying there and the face cloth which had been on Jesus' head, not lying with the linen cloths, but folded up in a place by itself. Then the other disciple, who had reached the tomb first, also went in, and he saw and believed. For as yet they did not understand the scripture, that he must rise from the dead. Then the disciples went back to their homes. But Mary stood weeping outside the tomb. And as she wept, she stooped to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white sitting where the body of Jesus had lain, one at the head and one at the feet. They said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "They have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." Having said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing, but she did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said to her, "Do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. But go to my brothers and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went and announced to the disciples, "I have seen the Lord," and that he had said these things to her. As I have read through the resurrection stories this week, it struck me just a little bit that the initial resurrection stories, the very core of what happened when people came to the tomb and found the stone rolled away and found it empty, that Jesus doesn't really appear at that moment. The women are the first to notice that something is up. They are coming to the tomb while it is still dark. They are coming to put spices on the body. And they come and they're wondering whether the stone is rolled away, and they see the stone and they see the angels. And then in the version that we read today, Peter and John hear the story and come to the tomb, but they don't see Jesus either. It seems to be only the women that see Jesus in the beginning, but then a little bit later in the story, and it seems as if the breaking news that Jesus has come out of the tomb doesn't include Jesus. He's not there. He doesn't appear right at the beginning. He appears fairly quickly, although the timing isn't perfectly clear. But there's a tremendous amount that happens in this story, and that happens in the hearts and minds and lives of Jesus' disciples before he shows up. And I just wanted to focus on that for just a couple minutes. And I'm just summing up rather than reading all of the stories and going through them in great detail. Matthew tells about the great fear that the women felt. He mentions the word afraid and fear three times. As the women came to the tomb, they felt fear. And Mark refers to a problem that they had. There was an issue that needed to be dealt with. They were perplexed, he says. And the question they had, the problem they needed to deal with was, who's going to roll away the stone? Which was a great big huge stone. And the seal of Pontius Pilate, the seal of the empire, was on it. And as they came, they were perplexed. They had a problem. And then Mark says they saw a young man sitting on the stone that had been rolled away, and they were alarmed. Here's again this fear aspect. Trembling and astonishment had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. Luke tells about the women coming back and telling the disciples, and he doesn't say that they had seen Jesus yet. But the disciples, when they heard the story from the women, they thought it was an idle tale. They thought it was fake news. They didn't believe them. And John, as we read, talks about this running. Mary Magdalene runs back to the disciples, and she tells them that Jesus' body was not there. And Peter and John, as John says, ran back to the tomb. Can you imagine that running? Can you imagine what that was like? This was not just a short little run of a couple minutes. This probably took a little 15, 20 minutes, a half hour. There were some distances. And they're running. And Peter goes into the tomb first, and he sees the claws lying there. And then John comes in. He's a little more timid, but it's John that believes. It doesn't say anything about Peter. And then John is very clear to say that neither Peter nor John understood the scriptures. So there's this whole ball of emotions and this whole ball of things happening in this story before Jesus shows up. And I think today we can identify with a lot of those feelings. Of course, the fear one. As we've been saying for weeks and weeks and weeks, this is, I believe, the fourth Sunday we've been doing this. We're living in dangerous times. It's dangerous for me to go out, and it's dangerous for you if I go out. And if you do go out to a store, then you notice you are avoiding people. You are giving them a wide berth. There's fear for the medical aspects of this virus. There's fear for the relational aspects. What is this going to do for our relationships on all levels? What's this going to do for our economy on all levels? What's this going to do for our society? What's this going to do for our church? What's this going to do for our culture? What will happen to us? What will happen to me? And what will happen to us? And I know I've felt a lot of anxiety over the last weeks, and I'd be very surprised if most of you can't identify with that in one way or another. And then there is this problem that perplexes us. What is this virus? Who's going to deal with it? How's it going to be dealt with? Is there a cure? And if so, what is it? What's the best way to protect our societies of the whole world from the devastation caused by this virus? What's going to get us back on our feet again? What's going to happen to my future? What's going to happen to our future? These are just like problems. They perplex us. We don't know the answers. And I thought the running thing was interesting. A lot of us, and I include myself in this, say that in these days, even though most of us are spending most of our time at home, we're actually pretty tired. By 9:30 at night, I'm ready. I'm done. I'm finished. And you hear and you see that a lot. People are just tired. And some of it is because we literally are running. Some of us have children at home. We're doing homeschool. We're doing our work from home. Some of us are worried and paying a lot of attention and energy to businesses or to jobs, especially if you're in the medical profession. You're doing 12-hour shifts. And we're tired, but we're just tired because we're in one way or another running. We're either running physically with our jobs or running in our minds or running in our hearts or running in our emotions. And of course, we're wondering what news to trust. What is idle nonsense? What should we believe? Whom should we believe? And why? How do we understand what's happening? How does this fit into our story? How does this lockdown, how does this shutdown, how does this virus, how does this fear, how does this fit into our story, both personally, my story as an individual, within my family, thus as a community, and of course as a nation and as a world? And then there's a certain feeling of amazement. The amazement that the women and that the early disciples felt. They hadn't seen Jesus yet, so it wasn't amazement because we've seen Jesus. It's amazement. How can this be happening? This is totally out of every box that we know. We're taken by surprise. Just a month ago, let's say 6 weeks ago, everything about our lives was pretty normal. And now, 4 to 6 weeks later, our lives and our futures have been pretty significantly upended. So we can identify with these early disciples, with these disciples of Jesus, as in the first moments and hours after they knew that the tomb was empty. We're here on this Easter Sunday with many of the same thoughts and feelings, fears, and anxiety the early followers of Jesus had. And I'll repeat the quote that I started off with from April Feet. What if this year we are having a hard time looking into the empty tomb and seeing the joy? What if this year we stand outside and wonder what it all means? What if this year we hear the words of the women and they sound like nonsense to us? But then, Jesus shows up. And he shows up at a variety of times. And he shows up in a variety of ways. And he shows up to a variety of people. And when he shows up at all these different places, he says a number of things, and I've gone through them a little bit. The first thing he says, and the biggest thing he says, is, do not be afraid. Almost the first thing he says every time he shows up and appears to anybody, he says, do not be afraid. And of course, you know all that the disciples at that time had to be afraid of. Their lives as followers of a crucified Messiah, they were fear for their families, for their economy, for their people, for the Jews, for their world as they knew it, for this great inexplicable thing that happened, that the stone was rolled away and the tomb was empty and there was Jesus standing before them. Of course, they were afraid. And Jesus says, do not be afraid. And that's what I say to you today. Do not be afraid. Except just to say the word, of course, won't do it. I'm not that naive. But this word is being said by the crucified one, who on that cross took all the evil of the world upon himself, and who is now alive after being dead. And the image I'd like you maybe to take with you today in this don't be afraid word is this. Think of a parent. If you've had children, you know what this is like. And maybe you remember a time from when you were a child when a parent puts their arm around you or takes you up in your lap or gives you a hug and says, do not be afraid. Or maybe they don't literally say it, but you know that's what they meant. And you probably still were afraid. But there were the arms of this parent around you. There was this parent holding you. You were afraid, and the thing to be afraid of was still there, but you weren't alone in your fear. As we saw in the first song, one of the, I don't know who did it, but that little drawing, every little thing is going to be all right. That's what Jesus means when he says, do not be afraid. And the next thing he says is, peace be with you. Do not be afraid. Peace be with you. Fred Rogers says this. When I say it's you I like, I'm talking about that part of you that knows that life is far more than you, than anything you can ever see or hear or touch. That deep part of you that allows you to stand for those things without which humankind cannot survive. Love that conquers hate, peace that rises triumphant over war, and justice that proves more powerful than greed. Peace, when Jesus says peace, again, he doesn't mean that conflict is over right now. It will be over then. But right now, it's not over. But what he means is, in the conflict, there is love, and especially love with a capital L. That's Jesus, who's here, who not only is taking you in his arms and holding you on his lap and comforting you and saying, do not be afraid. He's also saying, I love you. And in that love, there is ultimate peace. But it's only honest to not skip over this part. Jesus actually scolded the disciples a little bit. He gave them a little bit of a hard time. Mark puts it this way. Afterward, he rebuked them for their unbelief and hardness of heart because they had not believed those who saw them after he had risen. Can you imagine Jesus giving those men disciples heck because they didn't believe the women? He rebuked them for their unbelief and hardness of heart. And when Jesus was on the road with the two disciples going to Emmaus, he said to them, O foolish ones and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. O foolish ones, that's not an easy word to hear. Can you imagine being called foolish? O foolish ones and slow of heart. And then, of course, you remember the story of Thomas. Where Thomas hadn't seen Jesus in the beginning and needed to be shown proof, needed to touch Jesus. And Jesus says to him, put your finger here, see my hands, put out your hand, place it in my side. Do not disbelieve, Thomas. Do not disbelieve, but believe. And I'd like you to hear those words of Jesus too. Do not disbelieve. Do not consider this Easter to just be, well, it's spring, and so we're celebrating spring. No, we're celebrating spring because it's Easter. Do not disbelieve that, says Jesus. And he says it lovingly, of course, but it's sharp. Do not disbelieve. Do not be hard of heart. Do not be slow to believe. Do not be foolish. This is bedrock truth for you, for me, for us, for everyone. And then what Jesus did several times is he taught them from the scriptures. Beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. A few weeks ago, I listened to a podcast, an interview with the historian Rebecca Solnit. She talked a lot about hope. She's a historian. She talked a lot about hope. And she said this, Hope looks back more than it looks forward. Much hope is grounded in memory. And this is what Jesus is doing with the disciples. There's this new hope coming that Jesus is now alive and is here, and maybe all kinds of things are going to happen. But Jesus brings the disciples back to the scriptures and back to their story. You know Martin Luther King's famous quote, "The arc of the moral universe that bends toward justice is so long, if you see its curve, sometimes hope lies not in the looking forward, but backward to study the line of that arc." When you look ahead, it looks dark. When we look ahead at Corona, we don't know what's going to happen next week, next month, in the fall, or next year. We can have hope because Jesus and God is working and doing things. But perhaps what Jesus is calling us to do is to go back to the scriptures, to look back, to study the line of the ark. We are all part of a bigger story. This is not a random series of events. This is God's story, a story that has been from the beginning of time. He is in control. He cares. And he is, according to Colossians 1, reconciling all things to himself. And then one of my favorite things that Jesus did, he made breakfast. You remember the disciples were out trying to catch fish. They were all night. They didn't catch any fish. Jesus came, said, "Cast your net on the other side." They caught a whole bunch of fish. And when they came on shore, they saw a charcoal fire in place with fish laid out on it and bread. The same Jesus who on the cross had been broken under all the evil of the world, who had broken through the burial clause and through the massive stone and the seal of the empire to return to life, is now kneeling on the ground, gathering stones and sticks, lighting a fire. Where did he get the fish and the bread? Can you see him there kneeling, the Lord of the universe, cooking a couple fish and breaking some bread and giving it to his bone-tired disciples, giving them this day their daily bread that they need? And that's his promise for you, your daily bread. And then finally, he sent them out with a message of hope. One of my favorite verses in the whole Bible is from John, where Jesus meets his disciples and breathes on them and says, "As the Father has sent me, so I send you." And this brings the story, speaking of the ark of hope, back to creation, where God breathes into Adam's body, made of clay, made of the dust of the earth, and he became the image bearer of God himself, tasked to protect and care for the good creation that God had made. And now again, at the beginning of this new creation, of this new thing that's happening, Jesus breathes life into his disciples and says, as the Father has sent me, now I send you into the world. Take care of it. Build my kingdom. Do what I did. Heal the sick. Raise the dead. Preach the gospel. Teach, baptize, make disciples. Be this community that reflects, that is a little piece of the kingdom of God in the brokenness of this world in which we find ourselves. And all of those things that Jesus said to those disciples at that time, in all the ways that he said them, he says to me, and he says to us, and he says to our countries, and he says to our world, do not be afraid. Go in peace. You have my spirit with you. You have new life, and there is no darkness that cannot be overcome by that life. Amen.